This is The Guardian.
Hi, Jane Lee here. Today we're bringing you an episode from our global news podcast, Today in Focus. With global climate talks happening in Glasgow, we've been hearing a lot about the climate crisis from the older generation of world leaders. But what about the younger ones, the people who have the greatest stake in the planet's future? In a conversation recorded last week, just as the COP26 summit kicked off, three young activists from around the world discuss how they view the threat of climate change and what they're doing to try to make governments finally take the climate crisis seriously.
We've known about the climate emergency for long enough now that there are generations who don't remember life before it. People like Rithima Pandey.
On my left, there is forest area, and on the right, I can see half of the city and the mountains behind that. I can also see the Ganges.
She's 14 and lives in Uttarakhand, a really incredible Indian state in the foothills of the Himalayas. More than 80% of which is classified as extremely vulnerable to flooding.
There in Uttarakhand, heavy to very heavy rainfall has caused landslips, landslides. There you can see even an elephant is stuck in the middle of a flooding river, the Chardham Yatra, which was stalled for 2 days.
In October, Uttarakhand flooded after crazy amounts of rain. It was the second time this year. And thousands of people are still missing, presumed dead, from the floods that happened there in 2013.
Chilling scenes like this of bridges, homes and cars being swept away have played out in various parts of northern India, which has been lashed by torrential rains since Sunday.
Rithima still remembers the aftermath.
And I mean, I also saw the destruction, you know, people losing their houses. And, you know, specifically what I was very touched by was seeing kids and, you know, hearing them that they've lost their parents. And that was the point when I asked my parents what was the reason behind this destruction and, you know, what can I do to stop it? Because I don't want to lose you guys or I don't want to die someday because of that same destruction.
Raina Ivanova is 17 and lives in Hamburg, Germany, where the weather's been changing. She knows why and who's to blame.
We also experienced in 2017, I believe, a very, very intense storm that flooded the city center and that also flooded my neighborhood.
Gushing through German streets and homes. Record levels of rainfall. Turning roads into rivers. Swallowing houses. And making vehicles seem like paper boats.
It was very terrifying. I was at home during that time, and I remember hearing the thunderstorms from inside the house. And it really felt like the sky was like crashing above us.
For years, the climate crisis may have felt kind of abstract. Future problems to be dealt with by future generations. Well, the future problems are here. And so are the generations who'll deal with them. Like Iris Duquesne, a teenager who's studying in Canada, but grew up in the French city Bordeaux.
One of the last summers, it was hailing like crazy, and the hail was the size of golf balls. And it was literally pounding on the windows and on the roofs and stuff. We've had cars in the streets. Their windshield were completely shattered. I mean, Bordeaux in France is the city of wine, so people have a lot of cellars to store their wine bottles that were just completely flooded, and people had to just throw every single one of their possessions away because it was too damaged by water. And it also spurred some big fears for me, like fear of water. For a while, I was terrified of rain because of that.
Boris Johnson opened COP yesterday, saying he stood with the army of young climate activists.
The children who will judge us are children not yet born, and their children.
But in the words of one of them, Greta Thunberg, they've heard a lot of blah, blah, blah.
Of course, we need constructive dialogue, but they've now had 30 years of blah, 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 and where has that led us?
And from Glasgow, they want action. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, three young climate activists on what they want, what they demand from COP26. Iris, I'll start with you. When was the first time you were conscious of this phenomenon of a climate crisis?
I guess I started hearing about it in late elementary school. We had this exercise where the teacher, he just asked the question. He was like, what do you guys know about the climate crisis? And I was like, well, it's an issue that like it's in France and it's affecting the climate and it's like warming the planet, right? And my teacher was like, well, you're partially right. It's an issue affecting the climate, but it's not only in France. It's in every country. And it's also threatening the livelihood of a lot of people and a lot of the animals on the planet. And I was like, oh.
I mean, that's a pretty heavy bit of information, that there's this thing that threatens the livelihood of people and animals and nobody's doing very much about it. Do you remember how you reacted to hearing all that?
I'm a child, so I thought I can't do anything. So adults have to have done something, right? And then I realized they hadn't. And I was like, oh, that's a problem. And maybe I can bring my opinion to the table and try to do something instead of adults.
Yeah, it's such a big question. I mean, why hasn't anyone done anything about it? But it's also quite a basic one. And I don't think we know the answer to that even many years later. Raina, what about you? When did you first become aware of this idea that there was a really serious problem with the climate?
I think for me, it was a bit later, around seventh grade, if I remember correctly. We watched the Al Gore documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, in geography class.
The scientific consensus is that we are causing global warming.
And that was kind of a shocking point for me, because you saw what Iris just described.
This is really not a political issue so much as a moral issue. Temperature increases are taking place all over the world, and that's causing stronger storms.
We saw all these livelihoods of the people being destroyed, and then these statistics showing that if we keep on going like this, it will only get worse in the future. And these like very scary consequences will be something that will occur during my lifetime.
The Arctic is experiencing faster melting. If this were to go, sea level worldwide would go up 20 feet.
After we saw the documentary, I asked my geography teacher if I could give a presentation on climate change, which is why I then researched even more. And I think that was the starting point for me.
And you, Rithima, when did the scale of the problem first become clear?
I don't really remember when I realized, you know, that no one is doing anything. But it was kind of like after 2 or 3 years when I started learning, and gradually when I became old enough to understand what's happening in the world. I mean, specifically in India, nothing is happening and no one is really concerned about anything. It's just, you know, everyone is just centered about themselves.
Talking to you guys, it's striking that for me, climate change was something that became a big deal just as I was becoming an adult. But for you three, it's something you've lived with and been aware of since you were very young children. Raina, when you're talking to your friends, do you guys talk about the climate?
I actually don't like to bring it up in like everyday conversations because it's such a frustrating topic. And I know that it needs to be talked about. But every time I do start talking about it, I get more frustrated. And so I feel like there needs to be a space created where you can actually have a constructive conversation. Because if you just get together in small talk, you start ranting about the climate crisis, that will not get us anywhere. And so I, for example, lead the climate club at my school where we meet once a week and specifically talk about how we can make our school more environmentally friendly and how we can raise awareness for the climate crisis in our school.
Rithima, I'm interested. What kind of things do you do in Uttarakhand and across India to try to raise awareness about this issue?
I started talking to more people, you know, from the older generation in my state and in my country. And I just felt like all the time they listened to me, but they were not interested. Or they just said, oh, you're doing a great work, but they never wanted to be a part of the conversation or, you know, to be a part of the solution. And that's when I realized that it's not going to be a great decision to just waste your time making the older generation change, because they're so concentrated on their profit and money that, you know, it has hijacked their mind in a way. And that was the time when I started working with the youths. And what I do currently is that I go to schools and colleges and make kids aware about what are their rights and what climate change is, how it is impacting them. And I also work on the problems in India. Say, for example, it's air pollution is one of the biggest problems in India. And it's going to accelerate like from this month till like December because of the stubble burning and because of our festival Diwali, which is coming up soon. I'll start, you know, having a campaign, online petition, or I'll start working with the activists of that area just to make sure what can we do to stop that project. And yeah, that sort of is what I do.
Iris, I'm interested in whether you feel the same way Rithima does, that older people are so stuck in their ways that there's almost no point in trying to appeal to them.
Yeah, well, I definitely, in the few years I've been an activist, I definitely noticed that it was harder to talk to older people, like 25 and older, because they just haven't been raised with this sense that they're using up all of Earth's resources. And also, it's pretty hard to change someone's habits, you know, like my grandparents. It's very hard to change their habits of taking the car everywhere and using plastic bags at the supermarket, etc. And also, I've noticed that they tend to get very frustrated with us, you know, with the claims that they caused the climate crisis and that they're responsible for it. And they're like, well, you're not grateful for what I've done for you. You're not grateful for everything that we've worked towards. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not that. I'm not ungrateful. It's just I need you to change your habits so that everything you've worked towards can come to fruition on the long run, so that my children, if I ever have children, will be able to profit, you know, also like gain from that. It's an ongoing combat.
I think that's a very interesting question, and one that is often asked in connection to climate change. And while I do feel like sometimes when I talk to older people that they don't really show me respect for what I'm trying to say, there's also conversations that I've had with people from the older generation which are very conscious about climate change and who want to support young people. And so I don't think that you can put the younger and the older generations into two boxes, because even within the younger generation, there is many young people who are not climate activists or don't care as much, maybe because they're not as informed. And I actually think it would be quite sad to say that there is this big generational conflict, because we need to work together if we actually want to create meaningful change.
One of the most prominent climate activists in the world is, of course, Greta Thunberg, who's been able to give voice to some of this anger and this frustration that all three of you have talked about.
There is no planet B. There is no planet blah, 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 blah. This is all we hear from our so-called leaders. Words. Words that sound great, but so far has led to no action.
So I'm wondering, Iris, if you can talk about the impact that Greta has had on raising awareness about this issue and helping to organize young activists like you three.
I mean, in my opinion, she was the first youth to really have an impact and being really listened to by adults. So she was definitely a big, big inspiration. I mean, when I saw her intervention, for example, at the French Parliament, when she pretty much told every single French politician that they were not doing enough and that she was, we were all dying because of them.
Or maybe you are simply not mature enough to tell it like it is. Because even that burden you leave to us children, we become the bad guys who have to tell people these uncomfortable things because no one else wants to or dares to.
I was like, oh my God, that's really what I want to do. So getting to work with her, and I think Reina and Rithima can also say the same, but I mean, getting to work with her was really a dream come true, and she's so hardworking and serious. You know, it's a real, real pleasure to work with her.
I can just completely agree that she's a very powerful young person. And it's always so inspiring to hear her speak, because she doesn't cover up the truth and she is not trying to be polite in order to not step on anyone's toes.
The people in power, their beautiful words are the same. The number of politicians and celebrities who want to take selfies with us are the same. The empty promises are the same. The lies are the same. And the inaction is the same.
And I think that this is something that inspires many other activists. And I also feel like we are constantly kind of inspiring each other, which probably is also the reason why there is such a strong network.
It really is such a stressful issue that you're all immersing yourself in. And I wonder, how much pressure do you feel to try to live up to the kinds of values that you're promoting as an activist? And is it even possible to do that?
There is a huge pressure, you know, when you are an activist and you're asking people, you know, specifically to change the way they're living. I mean, there is one thing which I notice, you know, people are like, you know, using plastic and, you know, destroying everything, using cars and stuff like that. But once they see an activist, you know, it's very easy for them to point out a mistake. I mean, I myself say that it's not possible for us to change completely, because when I go to an event or anywhere, you know, to a convention or anywhere, if I forget my water bottle, I always try not to use plastics. And that what it ends up being is that me not drinking water for several hours. And when you are an activist, you know, everyone just assume that, oh, you're an activist, you should have a zero, like literally zero waste lifestyle. But that can't be possible, because most of the daily essentials, like breads and stuff like that, comes in plastic. So I can't say that I live a zero waste lifestyle. But I mean, I have my schools, I have my exams, I have, you know, a lot of other stuff to do rather than, you know, being stressed. So yeah, it's very stressful thing for me, I can say.
That's definitely true for me too. I think within even the community of like climate activists, there's often this kind of occurrence that we blame each other or we blame ourselves because we feel like we are not doing enough, or we look at others and say, oh, they can live more environmentally friendly. And I think that is actually quite a sad thing.
Iris, in your case, you've moved from France to the US and now Canada. Many of us move. I'm not suggesting you're doing anything wrong, but is the environmental cost of air travel something that you think about?
I just moved to university in Montreal from San Francisco, and I was in the airport and I was like, man, I'm taking the plane and I have to buy a water bottle to take the plane, and then they're distributing water bottles in the plane and treats, like little biscuits in plastic packagings, and I can't do anything about it, but I feel so bad because I would rather taking the car, you know, to go there, but I couldn't. So you start blaming yourself and like asking yourself, like, am I really worthy? Like, is what I'm doing really necessary? Am I in the right or am I in the wrong for doing this?
It just seems like an incredible amount of guilt for you all to carry around, on top of the anxiety of knowing that you're going to inherit a planet that has been profoundly damaged by what previous generations have done. And I guess all of it points to the importance of structural changes, just so the pressure isn't completely on you as individuals. I mean, on that note, the three of you, as well as campaigning in your own countries, you've been working together on a landmark legal challenge. You're part of a group called Children Versus the Climate Crisis, which is 16 campaigners from across the world, including Greta Thunberg. And you all recently took a case to the United Nations. Raina, could you tell me about that?
Yes, absolutely. So in 2019, we filed a petition against five countries, which are France, Argentina, Brazil, Turkey, and Germany, through the optional communications protocol of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. So the petition was in front of the Committee on the Rights of the Child, because we argue that these five respondent states violate our rights as children through their contribution to climate change. And our petition was actually turned down only a few weeks ago, which was very disappointing for all of us.
I mean, this was a complicated case, but the point of the judgment was that basically you can't use international law to force countries to make the emissions cuts that they've promised to make in the Paris Agreement. Rithima, where does that judgment leave your movement? I mean, how do you force governments to do what they say they're going to do if you can't use the courts?
I mean, I'm kind of confused what I'm going to do, because I filed a petition in my country and it was kind of a fail. And then the committee turned this down. And, you know, if we can't use the international courts, we can't use our national courts, then what are we going to do? I mean, it's very easy for governments like the Indian government to ignore the strikes or even, just suppress them. So, I mean, it's kind of a very stressful situation of how we can make the governments realize, because if committee from the UN isn't ready to help us, then, I mean, whom does we expect to help us?
Coming up, the generation who'll one day lead the planet on what needs to happen at COP to save it.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to COP. Welcome to Glasgow.
I'm talking to all three of you in the very early days of the COP26 summit in Glasgow.
And so let's get to work with all the creativity and imagination and goodwill that we possess. Thank you very much, and good luck to all of us. Thank you.
Raina, I'm wondering from your perspective, what needs to happen over this conference over the next fortnight for you to really consider it a success?
I think what we need are drastic, deep-reaching structural changes, which will decrease emissions and allow the national climate targets to actually be compatible with the Paris Climate Agreement. And for example, talking about Germany, our national climate targets are not aligned at all with the Paris Climate Agreement, and even those national targets we are not meeting right now. And so I think that there is a lot of expectations towards the COP, because especially the young people want that radical change finally happens. And radical is always connotated with these bad things. But in this case, talking about climate change, radical is the most positive thing that could happen to us, because if we keep on going like this, we will end up with a global warming of more than 3 degrees Celsius by the end of the century, which will have major impacts on our lives.
Towards the end of the first week of COP, there's going to be a day dedicated specifically to youth empowerment. And I wonder, does stuff like that make you feel like the voice of young people is being respected at COP, or does it perhaps feel a little bit tokenistic?
I mean, as Raina said, I mean, we really want radical changes to happen. But, you know, just giving one day to the youths and, you know, saying that, okay, this day is dedicated to you guys, and, you know, this is to amplify your voices, but that's the one day. And, you know, rather than being, it's just going to be a limited number of youths, those who are going to be there. They're not going to be the ones from very poor communities, you know, because some of them might have not got the chance to go there. And, you know, rest of the time, you know, we are going to be in our countries and our governments are not going to listen to us. So, you know, even when you see the reports, there have been very great reports sent from India, but I mean, I was not able to see that same kind of results on the ground. So, I mean, it's just, you know, we have to wait and see what the results are going to be. But that's not sort of is the thing to do, that giving youths one day and then not listening to them throughout. And, you know, even if they're right and even if they're fighting for their lives.
Iris, if COP can't deliver a decent outcome and you can't use the courts to hold governments, even to those inadequate targets that they're setting, the writing's really on the wall. I mean, all three of you will inherit a world that is in serious trouble because of the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. Have you ever wondered about where you go from there? Like, what are the next steps?
If nothing comes out of COP26, I think it's a very good indicator that world leaders are unfortunately not ready to stand with youth at all, and that we really have to step up our game in terms of doing everything alone without our government's help. That's unfortunate, but if they're not ready to help us and they're not ready to listen, then I don't think we have time anymore to ask for help and ask politely.
What does that mean exactly? Does that mean more protests, more campaigning? I mean, how far do you go to try to lead governments?
Yeah, do even more protests, even more campaigning, really trying to implement a real culture of protecting the environment within your community. I think a big part of protecting the climate and protecting our environment actually comes from smaller communities like little towns. And it takes time, but it actually works. We see a bunch of communities in rural states of the U.S., for example, really pulling their resources, and entire towns just really working, for example, only with the renewable energies from solar panels and planting their own vegetables. And we see that the air in those communities is much, much cleaner than the air in cities that are supposed to be doing stuff for the environment. But the policies are just not strong enough. So doing everything on our own would mean more protests, implementing a real culture of protecting our environment. And I think that's how it's going to work. If we can't have policies behind us, if we can't have laws, if we can't have all the lawmakers of our countries, then, you know, excuse my French, but fuck it. You know, let's do everything ourselves.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end it than that. Iris, Raina, and Rithima, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
This episode was presented by Michael Safi with Rithima Pandey, Iris Duquesne, and Raina Ivanova. It was produced by Hannah Moore and Courtney Youssef, with help from Hebag Fadar. Sound design and original music was by Axel Kakoutier. The executive producers of Today in Focus are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. Additional production by Camilla Hannon and Melanie Tate. And if you want to hear more about what's been decided at COP26, I highly recommend you check out our podcast, Australia Versus the Climate. In this series, we tell you the story of how Australia's behaviour over decades has made it into a bit of a climate change outcast on the world stage. You'll find this series in the full story feed wherever you're listening to this podcast. Okay, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with more full story.